I gotta start a board meeting here at 7 o'clock. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
She just fell. No, she just fell and scraped her knee up by the chair. She is off for a minute. I would've been here 10 minutes.
I'd like to call the meeting to order, please. Will you all rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Carol, will you call roll, please?
President Graves.
Here.
Vice President Dawson.
Present.
Director Simon.
Here.
Director Steele.
Here.
Director Tatro.
Here.
Fantastic. Okay, this is our time for public comments. If anybody has any comments they'd like to make about anything other, apparently, than the water master plan, this would be your time to do it. Okay, public comments are closed. At this time, we have one thing on the agenda tonight. It is the workshop item. Before we get started, I would like to make a few comments, a couple of comments. I'd like to remind the board, as well as the public, to follow the procedures. We need to treat each other with respect and with courtesy. Fundamentally, there is no difference between a workshop and a regular or a special meeting, except the title. So all the same rules apply either way. One speaker at a time. And I will do my best to make sure that everybody gets to be heard. As we start the process, there's going to be some presentations by the people that put this master plan together. They will, at a couple different points during the procedure, ask for questions, so let's not interrupt them while they're doing their presentation. At this point, I'd like to introduce John Fawcett, Tom Elson, and Justin Shope. How about I do?
Perfect.
All right, and staff, if you don't have anything to add, I'm going to turn this over to them. Is that okay? Go ahead, gentlemen.
I think I'm going to
Turn the mic on the bottom.
As Kevin indicated, we're here to present a water master plan. The approach we're going to take is sort of give you an overview real quickly, just so that you understand the essence of the master plan, and sort of skip a lot of the details, because otherwise you can get bogged down and get lost perhaps a little bit. But we also brought the details for the second half of our presentation if people want to hear that. So our first part of our presentation is going to be sort of an overview to give you sort of an understanding of the essential elements of the plan, and then we'll open it up for questions after that, and it might make sense at that point then to refer to some subsequent details that we also include in part of our presentation. With that being said, I wanted just to discuss, I know this master plan is actually covering a 10-year period of time, and our position in a master plan, which is a standard position taken in all master plans, you start from where you're at today, and then, and I'll discuss that in further length, and then you project what you're going to need in the future based on your projected water demand in the future. And so with that, I wanted to first discuss a few essential elements of a water system, whether it's your system or anybody's system. I and you don't even have to look at this slide, but just more like listen a little bit in terms of, like, sit, pretend you're gonna be given this job of preparing this master plan. The first question you would ask is, how much water do I need? And so on that point, what we were given was the town of Discovery Bay provided information to us on infill development and the rate of infill development. And we knew where we were at today from water meter data, from output from existing wells, etc., to know where our production is today. And the thing to pay attention to, I guess, is on the first bullet there, we have the average day demand. So if I take the total water for the year that's produced, divide it by 365, that's what I'm using every day. Then you have a term called max data, man. You go, well, what's that? Well, you know that in July you're going to use way more water in December, so you have to consider that when you look at a master plan or when you consider your water system. Then furthermore, even during the course of a max day demand, you can imagine a situation, there's going to be a period of time when everybody's going to have their water on at the same time. So you're going to have a peak hour demand that you have to also think about. So that's, you break it down into these three terms. So you're going to have water demand, and you're going to look at average day, max day, and peak hour. The next part, so now you know how much water you use today. You know how much you're going to use in 10 years because we projected that out. Then we're going to need a water supply. Where's that water going to come from to meet this water demand now as well as in the future? Well, that's going to be in Discovery Bay from wells. And so how much water do you need? That's determined by the regulations. They say that you have to meet the maximum day demand with the largest single source well out of service. And so they want you, they assume that they want to avoid, the state wants to avoid a scenario where on the hottest day of the year, when everything's being taxed, you have a failure of a well, and that could be disastrous. So they're going to say, hey, we're going to assume that you could lose that largest well during that maximum day demand, and so we'll still be able to provide water that meets pressure and flow requirements. Next, water treatment. Well, if your water quality was satisfactory in groundwater, you wouldn't need any water treatment other than chlorination. But in the town of Discovery Bay, we have high iron and manganese that exceeds, mainly manganese, that exceeds the drinking water standards, and that therefore we have to have water treatment in sufficient supply to meet the max day demand. And so they don't say you need extra filtration to meet max day demand, you just need to meet max day demand with your filter system. Next is your water storage. Well, I need to store how much water? Well, again, you need to respond enough water to meet a fire demand and then an operational storage component. On that, I'll just briefly say that during your peak hour, when you're using the max water you can get, it'll exceed your capacity of your wells. And so you need to meet that difference, you need to have some storage to offset the difference between your peak hour demand and your production, your well production. Next, you have to get it to the people. So now you figured out your demand, you looked at your source supply, your water treatment, your storage. Now you have to send that water out into the distribution system, and you have to meet a certain pressure, minimum pressure of 20 PSI. So you can imagine that relates with your piping system, your diameter of your piping, and then your pumps that deliver the water, they have to be adequately sized to deliver that water. So that's the overview of the system and what governs each component. For Discovery Bay, I just want to show you a few numbers because people might want to come back some details. But the current demand now, average day demand, ADD, is about 2,500. We're projecting it to increase to 3,100. So it's just, 600 gallons a minute increase. And we talked about in the master plan how we came up with those numbers, and we can go through some detail again later. The max day demand, if you look at how different that is, it's kind of interesting. It jumps up to 5,700 gallons per minute. This is what your capacity has to meet your wells, 5,700. And then 10 years, it's going up to 7,000. And works out to be about 1.5. That statement there, the basis is how the regulations determine what that max day is, which is you take your average day on a max month, multiply it times 1.5, and works out to be about 2.25 times your average day demand. Peak hour demand currently is at 9,000 gallons a minute. Future peak is about 11,000, and there the regulations say 3.4 times average day demand, we have some actual data that's 3.68 times the average day demand. It's more or less the same, so we went with the more conservative because that's more representative of what you really have here. So let's look at water supply a little bit. Okay. Like I said, current max day is 5,700. Current well capacity is 7,300. You go, hey, that's good. We meet our max day demand. And then we go, well, if the current well out of, largest one out of service, remember the state says you have to assume your biggest one isn't available. All of a sudden that drops to 5,500 gallons a minute. And you got a deficit of 200 gallons per minute. And we think that that can, we mentioned this in the master plan, that 200 gallon per minute deficit is most readily addressed by looking at ways to get this little increment of flow from either well 1B to possibly well 6. But there needs to be a little evaluation of that. Regarding future max day demand, you have 7,000. Remember that number from before. Current capacity is at 5,500. Current deficit is 1,500. So what makes the most sense to meet that deficit? And so basically, what, and we'll have a discussion for anybody who wants to hear our rationale for that, but basically we're gonna put another well that would go to the Newport Water Treatment Plant, and well 5A, and there's many advantages to doing that, but well 5A is sort of a marginal well today. It's got some operational problems and operational history issues that are problematic. Well 5A would be a good well to sort of like just have it sit there and be the one we sacrifice as the well that we take, that's the single well out of service well, and then our new well would be used more than well 5A. It's again a lot of detail there I'm sort of skipping. And then the final question there is there enough groundwater available? So we've defined how much we need. Well, can we continue pumping groundwater indefinitely? Is there enough, is there sufficient supply there? More and more the regulators and are requiring evidence that that water is available before they'll even approve additional development and growth. And that applies here as well. And Tom Elson will be discussing this issue with the groundwater availability. After I finish this overview, he'll pick up that piece and then we'll go for questions after that. So next, water treatment plant. Well, current, again, starting with current max day demand, because that's what governs treatment, future max day is 7,000. Those are the same numbers you see again and again. Our current treatment capacity is 6,550. So we meet it today, 4,000 at Newport, 2,500 at Willow. Conclusion, based on infill growth projections, the filter needs, so at 2016 is when you're gonna need, based on our assumptions for growth, that you're gonna need additional filter capacity. When the max day capacity reaches 6,550, which is equal to the filter capacity. Hope that makes sense. So we need 450 gallons a minute of filter capacity, but if you look at the filters that are out here in the yard today, they're 850 gallon per minute units, and so we would just add another filter, 850 gallons per minute, even though we need 450 gallons per minute, because it just makes good sense and it increases the reliability there, and the cost effectiveness is there as well. So with each filter, also comes a filter backwash tank, a recycle pump, chemical injection. So there's other issues that, improvements that need to be made in addition to the filtration system. So basically we're adding a 850 gallons per minute filter, 50,000 gallon backwash tank, and that's roughly based on projections for demand gonna occur in about 2016. Finally, we go to, there's a distribution system after storage, and then we'll turn it over to the, is there enough groundwater subject. Okay, here, peak hour demand, I put those numbers because they're relevant to storage requirements. Regulations require that you have enough storage to meet a fire demand plus 4 hours of peak flow. And so that's what's governing it. Bottom line is we're okay at Newport. We've got enough storage capacity at Willow, but we need additional storage at Newport. And that's going to occur somewhere in 2013, 2012. And does everybody understand that? So all these improvements are all tied with the assumed rate of infill development. And so for each one of these, whether it's your source supply, your treatment capacity, your storage, et cetera, there's a certain time when you're going to reach the limit of what you have there now, when then you have to have an improvement made, capital improvement made, in order to meet the increased demand. Finally, distribution. Here, again, there's a lot of detail here. The bottom line is we put together a hydraulic model. We did fire hydrant flows. We calibrated the model. The fire department weighs in on what they need to see at a hydrant in terms of the flow rate and the pressure, and they'll test it. And then the customer, of course, is required to have a certain flow rate and pressure. And so there's different upgrades in your water distribution system that are required to meet this increase in water demand plus the fire department requirements. With that, Tom Elson will discuss the groundwater basin. The issue would be, okay, if we're putting in these wells, the question is the basin capable of providing the water that's required?
So for the master plan, we developed a conceptual model of the groundwater system, which is depicted in this slide. And so for just in words, I'll just describe what you're looking at in terms of the schematic. So all of these different colors, which appear in layers, represent different formations. And the formation, the green formation that I'm pointing to here, actually is the aquifer system that all of Discovery Bay's wells are producing groundwater from. Directly overlying that is a formation that is non-water bearing, and in fact it consists mostly of clay materials, and it's very impermeable, and it actually represents a very good protection horizon for the water supply. So that one way, and I'm going to show you in another slide, that one aspect that distinguishes your water supply from your neighbors to the west in Brentwood and in Oakley and other anybody who's pumping in that area is this overlying confinement that provides a good source, a good barrier to communication from surficial sources of contamination. An example of which is that this other green zone just below the brown here is actually brackish water, which that occurs naturally. And it is isolated from the groundwater supply by this clay layer. So, and then on top of that, you get into other types of formations up here, but this main confining zone actually protects from the brackish zone and then any surficial sources of contamination that might be things like gas station leaks, other types of dry cleaners, the types of things you read about in the paper in cities where groundwater is vulnerable to the, you know, kind of urban activities. So whether it's just sort of, something as like a dry cleaners all the way up to an industrial Superfund site. So one conclusion that we have is that the source of supply for Discovery Bay today and into the future is very well isolated in terms of source protection. So that's an important factor when we go to permit new wells. We can demonstrate, or replace a well, we can demonstrate to the health department that these wells will be protected, and that there's not, we're gonna, for under current operations and any planned future operations. So there's two ways, and I'm just obviously gloss kind of, this is a big overview, but there's two ways that we assess the sustainability of a supply. And one is to look at where water levels are. And this is a chart from dating from the 1990 up to present. And it shows water levels in wells in Discovery Bay. And you can see that from 1990, and then here's 2000 about here, and then we have a data gap, even though this line's connecting it, and then we have much lower levels in the last couple years, and this was due to the drought that we, you know, that the whole state experienced from about 2007 to 2010, and our most recent reading in this well, and we'll have some more here, we have a significant uptick in the groundwater level heading upward, and this is what we see throughout areas where you know, the water supply is affected seasonally and by climatic conditions, and at least with this, what I would call sparse data set, because one of the recommendations in the capital improvement plan is to install permanent transducers to have more frequent readings so that we can better assess the seasonality of groundwater fluctuations and climatic influences, didn't allow us a complete interpretation of conditions, but due to the isolation of the source and the drought that we experienced and the apparent behavior currently, we don't think that the system is overtaxed today, but there's a lot of room, or there's a definite room, which we've made a recommendation to improve the frequency of measurements and organization and interpretation of that on a more frequent basis. So groundwater levels is one thing that is very important to look at and to keep on top of in terms of the water supply. The other one is water quality. This slide's difficult to see, except it's a lot better on the screen when we first prepared it, but let me describe what's going on here. So here's Discovery Bay, Brentwood, Oakley, and then all these dots are different wells. I'm sorry, Discovery Bay's here, Brentwood, and then up in Oakley. Actually, this is still Brentwood, and here's Oakley. So Discovery Bay, these charts here show water quality, and this plot is for chlorides. And if you look at Discovery Bay, it follows a real flat line. There's some fluctuations up and down, but very flat. In the Brentwood area, there's some very definite increases in chloride that if you just look at this line that I'm trying to trace here, increase there. And the reason that your water quality is very stable goes back to that conceptualization that I showed you a couple slides ago, where we have really clear isolation of where we're pumping water from. In the Brentwood area, they don't have those clay formations as thick or as continuous. And so what they're vulnerable to is a lot of deep percolation of irrigation water, historic, the legacy of that, and as well as discharges of treated wastewater into Marsh Creek, things like that, that is causing this. And you're not vulnerable to that, and it's a very good aspect of your water system in terms of sort of protecting that water quality. And by protecting water quality, you're protecting the capacity, because in Brentwood, actually their capacity is limited in terms of their wells by some of these water quality issues. And so on this slide, here's Discovery Bay. This one is nitrate, and Discovery Bay doesn't even have measurable nitrate relative to some of these Brentwood wells that are very high, close to the MCL. They get to the point where they've historically had to shut in wells and replace them and go deeper. And Discovery Bay is not even in that. You're not even in that type of discussion. And then the last one is actually total dissolved solids. And again, it's very flat, where we see in other areas in this region, we see increasing or degradation, which ultimately limits supply. Discovery Bay, very flat. So water quality, the data source, or the available data and the conceptualization that we have of the aquifer system indicates very good source protection, a very reliable supply in terms of that. The one area that we will think needs to be improved is the water level tracking, and so that those recommendations are in this master plan. So that's what I have to cover on that.
And then before we open it up for questions, I just wanted to hit on one point here.
Mike, use the microphone.
Before we open up the questions, I just want to hit one final slide here on the capital improvement costs. So going back then, what we have for water supply is includes new well replacement well, well abandonment, regular well test. We sort of lumped all of the different capital improvement items that relate with groundwater, and there's details in the plan on that. Sort of a several items lumped together there. Water treatment, about 1.1 million. Water distribution system, about 3.4. Storage tanks, 1.3. And water meter upgrades. Again, it's required by the regulations that the that resident, that we put meters on the service connection. And so that's something that has to be budgeted for and planned as well. So there's some details that we have. We're ready to discuss if people are still inclined to want to know more about the details of it. So.
Well, at this time, I would ask the board if they have any questions with regards to this plan and what's in it. And please, Director Simon.
A comment and a question. One, you showed on that last slide 1.6 million for water meter installation. That's reimbursed. We don't pay for that. The homeowners pay for that.
Okay.
But I would also, on your overview storage, you have storage available versus storage needed. And at the bottom, you have an additional operational storage will be needed, a new 275,000-gallon tank. Is this based on your 10-year projection of building?
That's right.
So if nothing's built in the next 5 or 10 years, our needs wouldn't change?
You're right now, you're at the point where you don't have to do anything except to just address the 200 gallon per minute deficit.
That's not what
you're good today.
Thank you.
Ray, you have any questions?
I'll just say the caveat to that, though, is if you're going to build something tomorrow and your source supply is inadequate, which is the first thing to be inadequate, then there's going to be if you don't plan for it tomorrow, there's going to be a delay when you do decide to build a couple of years. So that's something to think about.
No, I agree with you 100%. I just believe that the developer should be paying for it, not the residents who just every day.
Okay. Ray, did you have any?
No.
Director Steele.
So the capacity requirements are based on finished lots that have been approved?
On infill development plan that was provided to us from the district.
It's not necessarily hasn't been approved, but it's what is projected over the next number of years.
It's just the plan.
It's just the projected. It's included in the master plan, I believe, in table 2-1.
Actually, it's what we discussed that table pretty much in depth at the previous meeting, didn't we? And make some adjustments, or during a workshop or something,
yeah,
make some adjustments to it.
We did that at our.
Or is that just you and?
Okay,
just
you.
I'm sorry.
It wasn't just Kevin. It wasn't just President Graves and Director Tedrow.
I believe it was in the workshop.
It was the subcommittee meeting along with staff and.
Where we made adjustments to that table that we thought were a little more reasonable based on where the economy stands today and some other things. Correct.
That's right. We had a draft plan, and one thing that the comments we got back to the district was modification of that proposed field development plan.
Go ahead, Director Steele. Sorry,
it's there on the board. You popped it up there for you.
Chris, you have the floor.
Another question, just on water quality and stuff. You know, we've talked about it before, but you're talking about community. Dry cleaning, gas stations, etc., like that. Were those issues or sites identified in this study? And do we look at the influence it may have on our production in the future?
When we put in, like, well 6, for example, we looked at contaminated sites, and that's required when you do look at a new well. And then for this master plan, we are aware, and I think are the Richardsons here today, that they raised that in a question too. And we knew that the reason why you're not seeing the master plan is because they've officially closed that site as it's been formally closed as an interest to the state or county as a contaminated site. They feel that there's not a risk factor involved with that site any longer. I don't know if you guys were aware of that.
Okay, no, that's good information. I had no idea that that occurred.
Justin, what was the date on that?
Oh, it was in 2010. No further action statement was issued by the county.
Okay.
Or by the state.
So then I would just assume there's no risk of migration of this to the well site and then down the well?
Not when they close it. Okay. So it met the requirements for cleanup. And so as far as the supply goes and the projections of supply, what we would consider is any impacted groundwater today. So that your groundwater is not, your source where your wells are completed has not been impacted by any contamination. But that doesn't mean that the source isn't vulnerable to something. Whenever people live around there, there's a risk. I suggested that the risk is lower for you than other areas because of the geology. But as John said, that whenever you site a new well and as part of ongoing monitoring that's done and testing that's done, is that we evaluate contamination sites. We do public search, record searches to identify where it's been reported, and then determine any vulnerability to the water source, the supply.
Right now, just add that if you look at your annual report that is published, the DPH says they have a frequency of sampling parameters that they are interested in, and they'll come back to parameters on some schedule, and they're looking at VOC contamination, MTBE, whatever. And there will be a list of constituents under Title 22. It's their governing agency that decides what water quality parameters are to be monitored and reported to the public. And so that's where that reports. It's a requirement, and then you all receive it. I think you have one back there on the table.
And then I'm looking at this planned infill developments. I don't see it. I don't see anything like the land behind Safeway. I thought there was an office park that was proposed that may have been pulled back, but do we have any capacity address for the site, the 50 acres behind Safeway?
It is Byron 78, Sandy Cove. It's on there.
Okay.
Thank you, Bert.
No problem.
Anything else, Chris?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Just so I understand correctly, to get back to that MTB, because that was a big thing here for a while, and there was monitoring that was mandated on that, I believe, by the state, and so they came up with this conclusion because the monitoring was sufficient for them to see that it had either diluted or whatever happened to it. It was no longer an issue. Is that correct?
The term they used in their report, it was naturally attenuated.
Okay.
And that's a form of remediation.
But that was because of, but they saw that because of constant monitoring that occurred in the surrounding area, correct?
Right, and we didn't, the details on a specific site are quite extensive, and so I'm not sure exactly.
I'm just generally saying that's how they came up with their conclusion.
They issue a letter, they monitor it, and when they see it's stable and a non-threat, that's when they issue a letter.
Do you have any questions, Director Dawson? Okay, any questions from the public at this point? Please come up to the podium and ask whatever you would like that addresses issues with regards to the master plan. Sir, Mr. Richardson.
I didn't understand about the MTBE, and I guess we should have known this back when it was being discussed. Is it in the upper aquifer or is it in the lower aquifer?
It's up to every
jurisdiction. It's in the upper zone.
For one of them.
Upper. It's not in the lower.
It's not in the well supply.
So we're not taking water from the upper aquifer.
Like Tom indicated in his slide, that upper zone also is sort of bad water quality anyway.
You called it brackish.
Brackish. And Tom indicated on that figure, there was that confining layer, that clay layer, that you guys are lucky you have, a lot of people don't have, that actually protects that shed, the deeper zone where you're pulling your water from. Mm-hmm.
Is it not possible that the MTBE will go through that protective layer?
It's the mechanism, the whole way that chemicals migrate and move, the chances they're going through that clay are probably pretty small, but I don't know how much MTBE was involved or the exact concentration, or et cetera, but we got a letter indicating that the county and has been monitoring it, and
regional board,
yeah. And they issued a letter, and we had nothing to do with it, but it's in the public file, you can go and get it, that indicates that they've monitored that site long enough now and have concluded that that site no longer presents a risk to groundwater quality.
Is that available from the district?
It's a public.
I was just going to ask if Jessica can email me one.
Yeah,
email
absolutely.
Me a copy of it,
yeah.
I can distribute it.
I can do that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the public? Mr. Barber.
That was a very clear presentation and gave me a lot of understanding. Can you estimate roughly how many homes could be hooked up to the existing water supply if none of the enhancements were put in place other than making up that 200 gallon per minute deficit somehow?
That's right, what was the question?
So if none of the enhancements or none of the capacity increases were to take place, so based on just on today's supply, other than making up that 200 gallon per minute deficit, however that's gonna happen, by enhancing existing wells, about how many more homes, roughly, can the current supply handle? How many more hookups, residential, low flow, new home type
right
hookups?
Right now, none.
None. Okay. Second question is the 200 gallon per minute deficit that has to be made up is based on a state law, is that correct?
Right, right now, if you look at your dry year well capacity, it has to meet max day demand,
right.
And your 200 shot.
Right, and so how long has that law been out there?
I'm not sure when it was implemented, but it's always been good practice to follow that.
Is it new in the last couple of years?
No.
So as the town has added wells over the years, one just very recently, would it not have been possible to address that issue while new wells and new equipment and things were upgraded and repaired along the way?
Perhaps it could have been.
Follow on that. The only way that you could have addressed it would have been put the well in at that time instead of now.
Or to know the water demands at that time.
Or guess the water demands. So
yeah.
At the time that the wells went in, there was no way with your capacity they're going to be in 2011.
Right.
Just to add to that, so well 6 is the only well that district mm-hmm. has put in since well 4K was done in 96, 95, somewhere.
Right.
So that's the only well that we abandoned two wells, but then that's the only new well that we put in. And again, it's a risk factor when you put the well in. You're drilling, you're not sure what the capacity you're going to get from that. So there's some testing that once we drilled that hole in the ground, we had a rough idea of what we might get, but you still have to do some more further testing to size up the motor that's going to meet the size of that draw that you're pulling out.
And then I might add that you put in a well and it's not like it keeps able to produce that same amount of water indefinitely. It has a finite life and there's factors that come into play. Generally you'll see a decline in production from a well.
Mr. Flint.
Thank you, and that really was a great presentation. The only complaint I would have is that we didn't have it a week ago so we could study it and get a little more education on it. But in any case, Mark, I think the point that you made to Mr. Barber's point isn't right, because as I understand it, it is confusing. The calculation for maximum daily demand of those things are based on what year's numbers? Numbers from what year?
What was the question? Sorry.
What calendar year are being used to peg the maximum daily demand?
This year.
This year, this current. Year?
I thought there was something about 2006 was the highest monthly.
No,
Does that have anything to do with this?
Here, the Department of Health says they want you to go back 10 years and pick the max month that you've ever had a record, and that they base their formula on your max day demand based on that.
And what year was that?
2006.
Okay, so that's what I thought, if I understand this correctly. So that hasn't changed. Our max daily demand hasn't changed since 2006.
No, it has. The max day demand calculation hasn't changed.
Right.
But the max day demand, you can plot it and you can see it change and increase with whatever development you've had here. You can see it increase.
But in 2007, we would have had the exact same calculation, the same numbers that we're using now.
Well, that in the case of max day demand, the formula, the only relevance of the 2006 is that the state says you need to do that to calculate your current max day demand.
And that's what we're doing.
Yes.
Right. Okay. I think I understand it. Maybe I don't. The President Graves, the workshops or meetings where you discuss the scope of the study. You mentioned that earlier. Were they open to the public?
No, those are subcommittee meetings.
Those okay, not workshops. Okay, I'm sorry.
I misspoke. I apologize.
Okay.
That's how we got from draft to final, through subcommittee meetings.
Okay. And is there any record of what changes took place during those meetings?
What took place was the consultants submitted to us a draft document. We reviewed it at the staff level, made a number of comments and suggestions, and we have a subcommittee or ad hoc committee made up of Directors Tetreault and President Graves. We meet with them regularly. We had a meeting this morning on the wastewater side, not on the master plan, but just on the wastewater side. And so they're very involved in that. And as on that subcommittee, they were able to weigh in on the preliminary draft master plan. So the preliminary draft master plan changed somewhat to become what you see today. So there were some modifications that were made based on some of the recommendations that we had. And so the only difference would just be those changes.
And do we have a record of those?
Yes.
The public can see?
Attorney says we can see.
Oh, that's great. Thanks. Finally, are the Hoffman responsibilities for development of infrastructure in Discovery Bay totally extinguished? Are they done? Or if there's a deficiency right now, is Hoffman in any way responsible for anything?
We don't know the answer.
Well, yeah, this is that's
we're looking at that.
There's probably going to be more discussion along those lines at other meetings. This meeting specifically just to become familiar with and understand this plan from today moving forward, not the history that got us here, but that will be a subject of discussion at other meetings, and that will be agendized and publicized.
Perfect. Well, thanks for the presentation. Really helpful. Thank you.
Mr. Keir. Welcome back.
Yes, thank you. It's been a while. In the report, you talk about 1,350 approximately additional units to be built out over the period of the 10-year program. And my question is, Hoffman, I believe, has about 600 lots that have been approved but not built. Are those 600 lots included in the 1,350 or not?
Yes.
the totals for this, I think Hoffman is Discovery Bay West, and so what we have there is the proposed infill development that you're
okay, providing. So those lots are all included.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Any follow-up from the board? Any other questions that would come to mind at this point?
Well, since we're gonna pass them along, and relative to your question about what changes, basically, when the build-out would be for the infrastructure, it was 2015 when the final build-out, everything would be done, and it was pushed out to 2020. That's basically what was the change.
That's right. The essence of the plan, the only thing that changed primarily was what was driving the schedule for it, which was the assumed rate of proposed infill development.
This is a question for the board. A topic called fluoridation. How come, do you know any history why we haven't added fluoride to our water? I know it's not a requirement for some history. Do you have any idea, Ray?
The requirement is when you reach 100,000 people, and we do have some fluoride, but it's natural within the aquifer and the water that we get through the soils and the stuff, but it's very small amount, and it doesn't meet the regulation. Some districts don't put it in,
right,
because the people don't want it, and then there's some that do put it in. But where we have to worry about is when we reach 100,000.
It's controversial. Some cities want it, some don't. I do think it's kind of interesting that Virgil's right. For some reason, the fluoride level sort of naturally high here relative for groundwater, but it's below what the amount they would put in if they were to add it.
So we're just in God's country. We got the good filter, we got the fluoride. We're awesome. Mr. Richardson. Doesn't get any better than this, man.
That's pretty good.
I just wanted to say, looking at this slide, Discovery Bay original, I hope, was intentional, and I hope that we continue to use that designation of the first Discovery Bay that was built, rather than proper or any of the other names, which are a little more inflammatory. So I'm delighted to see that up there. I hope it was intentional, and I hope that we would adopt that.
We made that change just for you.
Yes, Pat.
I do not profess to understand most of what he said and most of what was on there, but I just want to know if I can get this right in my head. If what we're doing tonight is giving the developers a chance to get their will serve letter because we put in all of this infrastructure, is that not right?
This has got nothing to do with the developers. This is about a 10-year plan for Discovery Bay moving forward. That's all this meeting's about.
But what you're talking about, the projected development?
That's correct.
You explain it to me.
Well,
okay.
I'll explain it. Can I explain it?
Yeah.
Would you prefer?
No, go ahead.
Please, Ray.
Well, I'll try.
Okay. I'll see if I need to correct you. Go ahead.
Okay.
I didn't mean to make a flat.
No. Go ahead.
It is an arbitrary number. Okay. It is a number which they needed a certain number to base their plan on. We could have said the build out was 2030. We could have said it was tomorrow. But based on what the thought process was we should use, that's the number. We haven't adopted that. We're just talking about what they presented as a master plan.
Oh, all right. See, now I understand.
Well,
thank you.
And it was pretty much based on experience. I mean, Ray's been at it for a long time. I'm in construction. I've been at it for a long time. It's based on where we had seen the trends, and common sense really was what drove the decisions, right, Ray?
If I can add one more thing to that, we also discussed it with the Community Development Department
right.
of the county. Mm-hmm. We discussed it with them. had discussions with David Lennon, with the owners of the Pantages property, with Newport Point, just to get a feel for what their timing of it was. And in some cases, we told that it's an unreasonable expectation you have based upon where you're at today. So we then took all that information, threw it in the blender, and came up with this diagram right there. So it wasn't just us thinking about it. There was a lot of discussion that went into it, a lot of
it. There was a lot of information disseminated
from all the interested parties.
Carol, do you have any questions?
No.
Okay. Anybody else?
Mr. Lennon,
David.
I just really two things. I know on this slide here, we did provide numbers that actually were a little quicker than this, and that the column heading is completion of units there. So we would be starting those 6 months or earlier before the completion dates, and then a range of completion dates. So perhaps the urgency of this is a little bit more than might be directed from this slide here. We'll provide those numbers to you. Hopefully we'll see those in the report. And I know there'll be an opportunity for the conversations about Hoffman's involvements and responsibilities. And we'll all remember back to when the decisions were made to build the joint system that we built together, both the Hoffman company and our Discovery Bay West development with the town to realize the cheapest possible development of treatment water for the community. And it was a conscious effort that we all made together, and we got to this point together from a master plan that was the desire of the board at that point in time. So there will be plenty of time to talk about that.
Thank you, David. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, Virgil or Rick, though, but my understanding is that the actual agreement was between Hoffman and San 19 in the county, not with the town. The town kind of just ended up with whatever they decided. Is that correct?
San 19 made the original. The county, Hoffman, and San 19 were the players. The district became a district, and within months, the agreement was eventually executed by this board, a prior version of this board, I should say.
Okay. Can I make a point that that's really not on this agenda?
I know.
Thank you. Let's go back to what we're supposed to be doing.
Anything else?
One more.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mark Armstrong with Pantages. I read through your report when it went online, and the community health department has it. I thought it was really an excellent master plan. The analysis is very thorough. The improvements required for both the town and for development are set forth there. Developers will pay their fair share. So I think it's a compliment to your staff and to your consultants and your board, the quality of what you've done.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Mark. Anything else? Okay, moving. Yes, sir.
I didn't understand this very well until somebody asked another question, but Hoffman has approved lots within Discovery Bay that are in the infill development area. So he has will serve letters. I mean, that's all. Okay, so there's no will serve letter, but he's able to build out on it. I guess I don't understand
that's all part of what will be discussed at another meeting. That's not agendized for this meeting, as Mark's
pointed out. The only thing that I would ask about that is it seems like it goes into the scope of the study. Because depending on the status of those lots, the scope of the study may
the needs are the needs. The needs are included in the infill. So the question was specifically, you asked a very specific question earlier, and that was, how many more homes can we support right now? And you were given that answer. That's why they're included in this projection here. So that's all, that, you know, again, that's history. That's not part of the master plan moving forward. They're included there, unless I'm not understanding your question.
No, you're not, but I don't want to waste everybody's time.
Okay.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Any future agenda items? Hearing none, I would like to thank you gentlemen for coming out here today and for your thorough report and for all your time and effort, and I'm sure you're fairly compensated for that. But I appreciate it anyway. Meeting is adjourned.